WGN. Asher Perlman is here. He's a writer with The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. He's also a cartoonist. You see his stuff in The New Yorker. There's a new cartoon collection, Well, This Is Me. And the book launch event this Sunday at 4 p.m. is at the Up Comedy Club at Second City, where you can catch his act. He's in our studio right now, too. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the show. I love Chicago. So it's really nice to be here.
You used to live here about 10 years ago?
I did. I lived here for 10 years, about 10 years ago. Yeah.
And now you're in Brooklyn.
Yes, sir.
How do we compare?
Okay, don't tell Brooklyn. Honestly, I like Chicago more.
Yeah. What's the difference between one of the boroughs or someplace in Chicago, would you say?
My assessment of Chicago, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I feel like Chicago is big enough to be exciting, but not so big to be daunting in the way New York is. And, I mean, I would love to live in a home that doesn't cost $7 million a month.
Yeah, two bedrooms.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we are sorry to see that the people aren't back in the city now the way they were before the pandemic. And it's not just the pandemic, but it was the crime. And now people are working from home and some people are afraid to come into the city. Is that a dynamic in New York, too?
Oh, that's interesting. I was work from home for a couple years. And now, I mean, I work right on Broadway and basically, you know, in the heart of Midtown. And
is it crowded?
I mean, from my perspective, I would say it's as packed as ever. But I'm sure if you ask someone who owns a big building with a lot of businesses with empty floors, I'm sure they'd
feel differently.
That, yeah.
It's noticeable, I think, in Chicago, though. Well, we're glad that you are here. And so this book is a collection of your cartoons.
It is. Yeah. I've been a New Yorker cartoonist for 4 years. I actually started in the pandemic because I used to perform live. I came up through the Second City here and I did live shows. And when they shut down, I started cartooning. And the book is a compilation of published work in The New Yorker as well as unpublished work that's just in the book.
But it seems to me like I've recognized your stuff for more than 4 years. Were you cartooning before the pandemic?
I dabbled here and there.
You're kidding me. Wait a minute. You were this good a drawer and observer? I mean, it's such a unique set of skills. You had that and didn't capitalize on it until 2020?
I was definitely dabbling a little bit, and I would characterize myself as a bad drawer, so I think we agree to disagree there. But yeah, 2020 was when it really took off because all of a sudden I had, you know, 10 hours of free time a day that I didn't have before.
Well, do you approach The New Yorker? Because they're famous for a lot of things, but certainly the cartoons are one of the reasons some of us love our subscriptions so much. It's an elite class of observers, writers, and cartoonists, all, you know, encapsulated in individual persons. Did you approach them or did they approach you? How does that happen?
I approached them. I actually met a couple of New Yorker cartoonists just in the Brooklyn comedy scene. And I was just a huge admirer of what they do. And I sort of did the gauche thing that we all joke about not doing, which was I asked if I could grab a cup of coffee and pick their brains. And for some reason they agreed and I did. And just sort of started from there.
And that must've been a thrill for you then when you get your first one or two in there.
Oh my God. I mean, if you had my brain in an MRI machine at that point, it would have been lit up like a Christmas tree. I mean, the dopamine just flooded my head.
What was the cartoon or two that you remember first getting in the publication?
First one that sold was you sell them and then they run in any order they want. So the first one I sold was it's a doctor who has drawn blood and there's a cart full of bags of blood. And the person is still sitting in the chair with a needle in their arm. And the doctor is looking at a chart saying, wait, how many gallons are in a pint? So I guess it was a murder. Technically a murder.
Okay, so that one sells, but then you don't know when that one's going to run.
Yeah, I think that ran a few months later. And the first one that ran was actually a pandemic one because it was after the first year. And it was two dogs walking and one of them saying, it's been a rough 7 years. It was topical.
That must make you feel good that description elicits that bona fide laugh from me.
I hope it's bona fide.
I'm a bad faker.
Okay,
I promise
good.
You that. So I'm looking at some of them now. We actually talked about this topic a couple of weeks ago. It's the ticket agent before people are able to board on the airplane. They've got the microphone, they're calling out announcements, and the ticket agent with a bunch of people standing around him says, "We will now begin boarding group two, and anyone from group three or four bold enough to try." I wonder how many of the moments then that you encapsulate in these cartoons are actual experiences of your own.
I mean, I would say 95%. I mean, I've never had a dog who's a doctor, so there's definitely some outliers.
Did you have a doctor, though, who didn't know how many pints were in a gallon? That's pretty funny.
No, I didn't. But I think it's because, you know, everything comes from your own experience. I'm sure there was a point where I was Googling how many pints are in a gallon, and I just, you know, phrased it wrong, and then it sort of reverse engineered the joke. But I mean, yeah, a lot of them come from my real life. I'm sure that, I mean, I can't remember anything, and well, just in general, but especially about how things come to be. But the airplane one, I'm sure that I was standing in line behind someone who, and I could see on their ticket that it was, you know,
right, yeah, right, right. The title of the book, "The Collection of Your Workers," well, this is me. Describe the cartoon for us. It's kind of a tough one.
Yeah, the inspiration. It's actually a sort of one of the tropes in the cartooning world is it's a couple approaching a building and the person turning to their date and saying, "Well, this is me," and then the home is tailored to, you know, to whatever the person is in a joke way. And my version of it is, it's a man and a woman ending a date. He's saying, "Well, this is me," and rather than an apartment building, it's a building size him.
It's a 40-foot him.
It's a 40-foot him, yeah.
Guy with glasses and mustache, same sweater on. So, "Well, this is me." Wow, it certainly is. So that was the inspiration for that, was the old trope. Rather than a crazy house or something that might be scary or comedic, it's, no, literally, this is me.
I mean, again, it's hard to remember how any individual one arrives in my head, but I think I was just playing with the trope, and then when I was trying to come up with a book title, I thought, well, that's nice, because in a sense,
this is me.
The book is me, and then I made the horrible mistake of naming a book "This Is Me," and then the pressure that comes from...
Okay, it better be good, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain ennui, don't you think, to the New Yorker cartoons, though they aren't so celebratory as they are observational, but also sometimes sad's not the right word, but sort of like that's how complicated life is, or how much it sucks, or how awkward it can be at times.
Yeah, I think that's a fair description. I mean, some of them are just silly, and then others are just wry, and there's kind of, you know, a billion points between those two that they can hit.
Two cowboys are sinking slowly in the sand in a desert, and it's evidently quicksand. One turns to the other and says, "If I knew it was going to be this slow, I would have waited to say goodbye." Talk about an awkward moment. We're just sitting there looking at each other. Here's another guy accepting what appears to be an Oscar. He's on stage. He says, "And if you think for one second I don't deserve an acting award, just watch as I pretend to be humble." And the list goes on. These are fun. These are funny. So when you're on stage then, are you doing stand-up comedy?
I do stand-up. I do characters. I do improv. I kind of do it all. I mean, I came up in Chicago. I was on one of the stages at the Second City, 10 years ago now. And one thing I really liked about Chicago is you kind of didn't have to pick a lane. You can do it all. You can do improv, you can do sketch, you can do stand-up, you can write, you can perform it. And I'm sort of continuing on that mission of just doing everything I can.
A couple of the things I wanted to talk to you about, including more of these hilarious cartoons, these cartoons that make you go, "Oh, yeah, right," which must be the most affirming thing you could get from somebody, right? Recognizing that moment?
It is, because a lot of times making a cartoon is kind of my futile attempt to not feel so alone. So if someone sees themselves in it, that makes me feel like, you know, I'm not as... bizarre
as that fear. In our studio, Asher Perlman. He is a writer on The Colbert Show. He's also one of those cartoonists whose work you see in The New Yorker. He's got a new book, a collection of his work called "Well, This Is Me." And the book launch event is this Sunday at 4 at the Up Comedy Club at Second City. He's performing there, and you can get tickets at Second City's website for that venue. They opened up some space because he's so hot. One of our listeners texted in to say, John, I love Asher's cartoons. Does he have any influences in the cartoon world? Like, did he grow up reading The Far Side?
Yes. I mean, first of all, I love this listener. But yes, I grew up reading The Far Side. I mean, I'm a kid of the 90s, so all of those... actually, my publisher is Andrews McMeel, which is the same publisher who put out Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side and Foxtrot and all the ones that I grew up on. So yeah, I think Gary Larson's fingerprints are all over me. And then my other influences are honestly the people who are doing it now. I think one of the funny things about comedy is that it ages so poorly. So in some sense, the people who are cartooning now are some of my favorites because it's new and fresh and exciting.
Still, I think a lot of us think of some of our favorite Far Side comics. It might have been the cover of one of the collections, and it's two spiders who have made a web across the bottom of a slide at a playground, and there's kids lining up, and the one spider turns to the other and says, if this works, we eat like kings for weeks.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Not bad. So I don't want to talk a lot about it, but you also write for Colbert. I guess you're not all in a writer's room. Do you just send in jokes? Is that how that works?
We actually are in a writer's room. During the pandemic, we went remote, but now we're back. It's just back to the way it was. So everyone's at the Ed Sullivan Theater and full audiences, everything.
Is that fun to do, or is that kind of more stressful than I would imagine?
It's the best. I mean, I in college, I watched the Colbert Report. He's been a hero of mine for as long as I've been developing comedically. So, yeah, working for him is a dream, and yeah, I love it.
Are there things that you don't want to draw comics or cartoons about, talk about? I don't see a lot of Trump or Biden stuff here. do you consciously stay away from that? What's your thought about that?
You know, I don't tend to do much topical work. And I think the big reason for that is I think I'm drawn to sillier things. And I like jokes that have at least a shelf life of 30, 60, 90 days, more than 24 hours. So
if you did one about the debate tonight, that might be wrong or it might be old next week, right?
Yeah, and there's a good chance someone else will have already made that joke on Twitter and I just didn't see it. And I feel like if you sort of go, you know, a few yards away from what's topical, it gives you a chance to tread new ground that's not, you know, been beaten to death by a thousand boots.
So topical isn't the word, but observational is. Mm. So here's a maybe Uber driver turning to the passenger in the back seat, and he says, sorry if there's sand back there. I went to the beach once 10 years ago. The next one is a couple that is sitting down on the sofa next to their son, it looks like. He's maybe college age. And they say, you did have a college fund, but then we decided to have one picture professionally framed. That is so true. I've taken stuff to professional framers, and often the framing costs more than the thing I'm having framed.
Yeah, I actually think that cartoon is inspired by, I had my first cartoon that was published in the New Yorker, I had that page framed. And it cost, I can't remember how much it cost, but it was so astronomical, I couldn't believe it. But then I had, actually, when I posted that, I had a lot of professional framers reach out to me. And this is one of the funny things about being online is, you know, you get all this real-time feedback. And most of them were not offended by it, but there were a lot of them that wanted to clarify that what they do really is, it's an artistic endeavor, et cetera. And I really respect it. So I just want to set the record straight. I respect framers. I think it's a difficult job, and I think it's cool what they do.
It's a difficult job what you do. I think you're a great drawer. You and I will agree to disagree on that. It's got a unique style. And for, well, about 4 or 5 years now, you've been reading his stuff in The New Yorker, and you will continue to see Asher Perlman there. You can also see him in Chicago at Second City in the Up Room. You can get the tickets online. And you can also check out his latest collection, Well, This Is Me, Asher Perlman. Come through our studio more often. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love it.
Really funny collection. Well, This Is Me.